At Contra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something important, Dr. Jennifer Eberhardt's book, Biased, Uncovering the Hidden Prejudice That Shapes What We See, Think, and Do. It's a major work.
Absolutely. It's genuinely transformative. And our goal today really is to kind of unpack her central argument for you. The idea that implicit racial bias operates sort of unconsciously, but it's this really pervasive force shaping how we see things, the decisions we make.
And ultimately, how inequality persists.
Exactly. It helps explain so much.
Yeah, because it feels like it shifts the whole conversation about race and fairness. You know, we think, okay, we've made legal progress, civil rights acts and all that. So good intentions should be enough now.
Right. That's the common assumption.
But the inequality is still clearly there. And Eberhardt basically says implicit bias is that invisible barrier. It's like a cognitive glitch almost that keeps leading to different outcomes and things like housing, jobs, even courtrooms, even when people think they're being fair.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that argument, it really lands because of who's making it. Dr. Jennifer Eberhardt, she's not just offering an opinion. She's one of the world's leading social psychologists. She's a professor at Stanford.
Right, Stanford. And she co-directs that SPRQ Center.
That's the one, Stanford SPRQ. It's all about translating research into, you know, real world action. So she's deeply invested in the practical side too.
And her credentials, they just speak volumes. A PhD from Harvard, right?
Yeah.
And she received a MacArthur Fellowship.
The Genius Grant, yeah.
Wow, the Genius Grant. That's serious recognition. And specifically for her work on race, psychology, and the criminal justice system.
Exactly. And what makes her view so powerful, I think, is this kind of dual perspective she brings. Mm. Well, as an African-American woman, she has this deep personal understanding of what bias feels like, the lived experience. But crucially, she pairs that with incredibly rigorous science,
okay,
you know, lab experiments, but also going out into the real world, partnering with police departments, with schools, with companies, testing these ideas where the stakes are really high.
Ah, so it's not just theory. She's bridging that gap between lived experience and hard data from the field.
Precisely. And that's what makes bias feel so, well, groundbreaking.
Okay, let's dig into the book's core idea then.
Yeah.
If you had to sum it up, it's about this hidden stuff, right?
Yeah.
What she calls the hidden architecture of prejudice.
Yeah, exactly. It's all the mental shortcuts happening totally beneath our conscious radar.
Right. Because the old story was always, oh, prejudice is just bad people being intentionally mean.
Exactly. A moral failing. Only bad people are biased. Eberhardt just completely takes that apart. Her main point is that bias isn't some character flaw. It's actually, well, a basic feature of how our brains work.
A feature. Like built in.
Kind of. It comes from these old survival mechanisms, ways our brains learn to categorize things really fast. Mm. Because it's fundamental like that, it affects everyone. It's not just one group's problem.
That changes everything. If it's not about being good or bad, but about how our minds are wired.
Then the solution has to be different too, right? It's not just about trying harder to be good.
And the book covers so much ground. It goes from like the individual brain, these tiny associations we make, all the way up to how these little glitches add up across society.
Yeah, into huge institutional patterns. She connects the dots from, say, a split-second neural firing in your head to, I don't know, a kid getting suspended in school or someone getting a longer prison sentence.
It's that connection that's so powerful.
And she shows this playing out everywhere. The criminal justice system is definitely a big focus. You know, police stops, profiling juries, sentencing.
Right.
But she also looks hard at schools, teacher expectations, discipline disparities, and the workplace too, hiring, who gets promoted. It's the same underlying mechanisms.
Hmm. And despite showing some really, frankly, disturbing stuff, the book doesn't leave you feeling hopeless. That's important.
Agreed. The tone is serious, obviously, but it frames bias as a problem we can tackle. It's tough, yeah, but solvable. It just takes commitment, both from individuals changing their awareness and from institutions changing their structures.
Okay, let's get into some specifics. The science part, this idea of automatic mental associations. Can you unpack that a bit more, how our brains link things automatically?
Sure. So think of it like this. Our brains are built for efficiency. They have to process a ton of information constantly. So they create shortcuts, quick links between concepts.
Like fire equals hot or tiger equals danger.
Exactly. Those rapid associations were vital for survival back in the day. You didn't have time to analyze whether this specific tiger was friendly, right? You just reacted.
Okay, makes sense for survival.
The problem is, in our complex modern world, those same rapid-fire association mechanisms are still running. So the brain might quickly link, say, black faces with concepts like crime or danger based on societal messages or past experiences, even if, consciously, you absolutely reject that stereotype.
So the shortcut misfires in a social context. The speed that helped us survive now causes, well, unfairness.
Precisely. Speed over accuracy, in a way. And this is where Eberhardt's research gets, frankly, kind of mind-bending. She shows it's not just about how we interpret things. Bias can actually change what we literally see.
Wait, change what we see? How is that even possible? How do you measure that?
It sounds wild, right? But she describes experiments, for instance, with police officers. They're shown images very quickly, maybe blurry ones. And statistically, they're more likely to mistakenly perceive a weapon in the hands of a black person compared to a white person, even in the exact same image context.
Whoa.
So the takeaway is huge. Bias isn't just shaping our judgment after we see something. It's potentially altering our basic perception of reality as it's happening.
That's profound. If your starting point, your visual input, is already skewed by bias,
then the outcomes down the line are almost bound to be unequal, aren't they?
Yeah. And if that's what happens in controlled experiments, you can see how terrifyingly it translates to real-world situations, like criminal justice. The book lays out stark data on racial disparities at basically every single step.
Mm-hmm. And she draws a really clear line connecting this to something she calls dehumanization.
Dehumanization.
Yeah. It's this finding from studies like the implicit association test, where on average, people unconsciously link black individuals more closely with ape-like concepts than with human concepts.
It's deeply uncomfortable.
It is. And Eberhardt shows that the degree to which that dehumanizing association exists correlates with real-world outcomes. Harsher treatment, longer sentences, even a greater likelihood of the death penalty being applied.
Oh, man. The example she uses, the Oscar Grant case, where the officer said he thought he was grabbing his taser but pulled his gun.
It becomes a tragic, real-world example of how these split-second decisions, potentially fueled by that unconscious association of threat or less than human, can have fatal consequences.
It's not just policing, though, right? You mentioned schools earlier.
Absolutely. The same kind of systemic disadvantage crops up there, too. Eberhardt points to research showing black students are way more likely to get suspended or expelled for the same behaviors that might just get a white student a warning.
The same behavior.
The same behavior. And it starts incredibly early. We're talking preschool.
In preschool. Wow. That early. That's setting kids up for failure right from the start.
It's a stark example of how bias gets embedded.
Yeah.
And then you follow that path. Educational disparities often lead right into workplace disparities, right?
Yeah.
That's where it becomes really systemic.
Yeah, moving beyond just individual actions into how institutions themselves operate, like rules that seem neutral but aren't.
Exactly. Take hiring, for example. If a company relies a lot on vague things like culture fit, or performance reviews are just based on a manager's overall feeling,
instead of clear metrics.
Right. Those are massive openings for implicit bias. You know, a manager might see assertiveness in a white male employee and think leadership potential, but see the exact same assertiveness in a woman or a person of color and unconsciously code it as aggressive or difficult.
Ugh. And those little judgments over and over across a whole career.
They add up. They compound. They create barriers to promotion, to leadership. That's how individual biases scale up to create systemic inequality.
But the book does pivot towards solutions, towards hope in the later sections. It's not just diagnosing the problem.
Definitely. She really emphasizes evidence-based interventions. And critically, these have to target both the individual raising awareness and the structures.
So changing the rules of the game, not just telling people to play fair.
Pretty much. The argument is strongly in favor of designing processes that actually limit the opportunity for bias to sway decisions. Think mandatory checklists for police, structured interviews for hiring, blind reviews for applications. Anything that reduces reliance on subjective judgment in high-stakes moments.
Okay, so if we were to boil this all down, maybe three core messages that someone should take away from bias, what would they be?
I think the first and maybe the most fundamental is that bias is universal human psychology.
Right, that shift away from it being a moral failing.
Exactly. It's a cognitive shortcut our brains use. Understanding that helps move the conversation away from blame and defensiveness and towards, okay, this is something we all deal with, so how do we manage it? It creates a shared responsibility.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second takeaway?
That the invisibility of bias creates its power. Because it's automatic, because it's unconscious, just wanting to be fair isn't enough. Good intentions can't override it on their own.
So that's why the self-work is crucial, like actively checking your assumptions, seeking out different perspectives.
Yes, precisely because your conscious mind might be completely unaware of the biases driving your gut feelings or instant reactions.
Yeah, and the third key theme.
It has to be that link. Individual bias aggregates into systemic inequality. It's not about one person being overtly racist. It's about the cumulative effect of thousands, millions of small, slightly biased decisions across all our institutions.
Like that manager giving a slightly less positive review or the teacher being slightly quicker to discipline.
Exactly. Each one seems minor in isolation, but when you multiply them across schools, workplaces, courtrooms, they create the massive, measurable disparities we see in society.
The book is also full of these really quotable lines, isn't it? Ideas that just stick with you.
She really does have a way with words, making complex ideas very clear. One that really stands out is, bias is not just a police problem or a white problem. Bias is a human problem.
Back to that universal responsibility idea.
Right. It frames it as something inherent to human cognition, something we all need to grapple with, rather than pointing fingers at one group.
That feels more productive. What's another one?
This one really nails the core mechanism. The bias in our heads becomes the bias in our world. It's that direct causal link she establishes from the internal unconscious association to the external real-world inequality. Our thoughts, even the hidden ones, shape reality.
Wow. Powerful. And maybe one more. Something about solutions.
Yeah, this one feels very practical and honestly achievable. The goal is not to eliminate every trace of bias, but to prevent bias from shaping our behavior in harmful ways.
Okay, so it's not about becoming perfectly bias-free, which is probably impossible.
Right. It's about setting up guardrails, implementing checks and balances in our actions and our systems so that even if the bias is still there in our heads, it doesn't translate into discriminatory outcomes. It focuses on behavior and impact.
That pragmatic focus is really helpful. So let's talk about applying this. How can you, the listener, actually use these ideas day to day?
Well, in a professional setting, if you have any influence over hiring or promotions, push for structure. Advocate for things like structured interviews where everyone gets the same questions, maybe blind resume reviews initially, and using really clear, objective criteria instead of just gut feelings or that vague culture fit.
Those systemic tweaks really matter. What about other fields? Say, healthcare.
Oh, absolutely critical there. Medical professionals really need to consciously ask themselves, could my unconscious assumptions be affecting how I diagnose this patient or how I'm perceiving their pain or the treatment I recommend? Ensuring consistent care, regardless of a patient's race, background, or even how articulate they seem.
And closer to home, for parents, educators.
It's about being intentional. It's not just about encouraging diverse friendships, which is important, but also actively looking at the messages kids receive. What books are they reading? What movies are they watching? Are these things reinforcing stereotypes, even subtly? Or are they challenging them? It's about modeling that critical awareness.
So, wrapping things up, what's the biggest thing you took away from diving back into Eberhardt's work?
For me, it really crystallized that dual need we talked about. You absolutely need the individual commitment, the ongoing work of self-awareness, questioning your assumptions. But that alone is never enough. You must have the structural changes too, changing policies, procedures, the systems themselves. One without the other just won't solve the problem.
I completely agree. Personal awareness is necessary, but it's insufficient on its own. What really struck me is how Eberhardt gives us the tools, the scientific grounding, to actually see and address discrimination that was, for so long, essentially invisible because it wasn't conscious hatred. She Right. makes the unconscious conscious in a way.
Yeah, she provides the blueprint, which kind of leads to a final thought, maybe a question for you, the listener, to ponder after this.
Oh.
Think about your own environment, your workplace, your community group, maybe even your family routines. Is there a rule, a procedure, a way things are just done that seems totally neutral on the surface, but might actually be quietly reinforcing some hidden bias, something to chew on?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.